For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is December the 20th.
2020.
Okay. It's December 20th. We are beginning Parshas Pinchas, page 876. So Parshas Pinchas picks up right where Parshas Balak left off. We had last time the dramatic end to Parshas Balak, where Pinchas came basically out of nowhere and put himself on the map by killing Zimri and Cusbi and ending the plague that had started that was killing the Jews, because the Jews were involved with the women of Moab and Midian, and because the Jews were involved with the Avodah Zarah of Baal Peor, and the plague had started, and Pinchas killed Zimri and Cusbi, and that ended the plague. When Pinchas did this, I mentioned last time, but we'll reiterate now, when Pinchas did this, it was an act of bravery, particularly because the Zimri was a respected member of the community. He was a leader of the tribe of Shimon, and he was recognized as an important person. And as is often the case in Tanakh, an important person, someone who really could have been a really great person, when they go bad, they go really bad. That often happens. And we have two different types of sins of great people. We have great people who sin on a very, very, very subtle level, and we have trouble understanding exactly what was the sin. And they're punished very, very harshly by Hashem. And that's because Hashem is medaktik im chasidov kechut hasayra, that Hashem is very exacting on the great ones, and it's to their benefit. So examples of that are, of course, David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, the types of punishments they got for very, very minor infractions, because of their greatness. But then we have really, really great people who unfortunately fell. It's not that the sin is not subtle, it's really a bad sin, and they really, truly fell from great heights. An example of that is Yeravam ben Nevat, who had been a great person, and then he fell precipitously. Korach could have been a great person. He fell precipitously. Zimri, as well, was a person who was really could have been a great person, and he fell precipitously. But there were a lot of people who thought of him as a wonderful, great person. And therefore, Pinchas' act took a lot of bravery, a lot of courage. And after he did it, it was not like he was held up as a hero. There were many, many people who felt that he had overstepped his bounds, that he was a small person sticking his nose where it didn't belong. That's what a lot of people felt was going on over here. So Hashem, therefore, begins Parshas Pinchas by speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu and making it clear that no, Pinchas did exactly the right thing, that Pinchas was brave and courageous and stood up for the honor of Hashem. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron ha-Kohen, Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, Hishiv eschem asi me'al b'nei Yisrael. He removed my anger from upon the Jewish people. Turned back, they say. They turned back my anger from upon the Jewish people. B'kano eskinasi b'socha. And I'm going to read the English here, when he zealously avenged me among them. So the word kina, the word kina can mean jealousy, but in this case it means to be a zealot. When he acted as a zealot on my behalf, and because he did that, I did not destroy the Jewish people in my vengeance. Now, I just want to point out, let's look carefully at the Hebrew words over here. We know that there is a term in English called a zealot. Usually when people use the word zealot, they use it as a pejorative. The truth is, though, that the word zealot in Hebrew, kanai, it can be negative, but it can also be positive. Depends how it's used. Sometimes zealotry is called for. In this case, it was called for. Pinchas did a courageous act, and he was supposed to do it. He did the right thing. It was a big act of righteousness to be a kanai, to be a zealot. And sometimes that is the right thing to do. If you look carefully at the Hebrew words, it says, I'm not going to translate the word kina and kana, that verb, I'll leave it in the Hebrew because I want you to see how it's used. Let's translate everything else. That pasuk Yud Aleph verse 11. Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, a Kohen, turned back my anger from upon the Jewish people when he was kana, my kina, among them, and I did not destroy the Jewish people with my kina. Now, if kina means zealot, so it's true that it says that Pinchas acted as a zealot. He was bikano es kina si. He acted as a zealot on my behalf. But it says he was mekane. Let's use it as a verb. He zealoted my kina. It says, Hashem is talking. And I didn't destroy the Jewish people with my kina. Sounds like Hashem is the one with the kina, and that Pinchas did something on Hashem's behalf. Now, so it seems that Hashem has this kina, whatever this word means, and Pinchas acted on Hashem's behalf. Now, so hold the place over here on page 876. Let's turn back to Parshas Ki Sisa on page 510. Pasuk Yud Dalet verse 14. Ki lo sishtachav el acher, do not bow to another god. Ki Hashem kana shimo. For Hashem, his name is Kana. Kel Kanahu. He is a god of Kana. What does that word mean? Same exact word as we have over here. What does the word mean? In English it says over here, for the very name of Hashem is Jealous One. He is a jealous god. Now jealousy, of course, is generally looked at as a negative, to be a jealous person. But what this means is, what does the word kana mean? To have kina is to be jealous. And we are told, don't be jealous. It's a bad thing to be jealous. We know that the root of all yetzer hara is in one of three areas. There's taiva, which is desire. There's kavod, which is pride. And there's kina, which is jealousy. That's where the root, every type of avera can be rooted in one or more of those three things. They all find expression in one of those three things. If you think through any avera that a person is tempted to do, it comes from one of those three things, either from desire, from pride, or from jealousy. That's where it comes from. And we are told not to be jealous. Don't be jealous. It's not a healthy thing. It's not a good thing. It brings a person to many averos when we are jealous of our fellow man. But Hashem, says here, is jealous. So what does that mean that Hashem is jealous? So it can't mean that Hashem is actually jealous. First of all, what is he jealous of? I can be jealous of you, because we're both human beings, and you have a quality, or you have an item that I want. So I am jealous. The problem with jealousy is that jealousy denies that Hashem is the one giving out qualities and giving out items. If I'm jealous of you, then I am saying that really I should have what you have. So that is a rejection of the Hashem's providence, that He gives me what I need and He gives you what you need. That's the basic problem with jealousy. So what do you mean Hashem is jealous? What does that mean He's jealous? How can He be jealous of what? What does another God have that He doesn't have? There is no such thing as another God. It's all smoke and mirrors. So what is He jealous of? So the only thing that the Avodah Zarah has that Hashem wants is our attention. Right? If a person worships another God, which doesn't really exist, then Hashem wants that person's attention. He doesn't want the person to be serving another God. He wants them to be serving Him. Similar to a situation where a human being wants the affection of a particular person and is jealous because that affection is going someplace else. So, that's jealousy. So, we're told not to be jealous, but Hashem is a jealous God. So, obviously, Hashem isn't actually jealous because Hashem doesn't need us. He doesn't need us to serve Him. We don't do anything for Him when we serve Him. It's all for our benefit that we serve Him. He created us to give us the ability to serve Him, and that therefore we can earn our place in the world to come. It's for our benefit. So Hashem is not jealous the same way that a human being would be jealous. When I'm jealous of you, it's because I'm not jealous for your benefit, I'm jealous for my benefit. But Hashem is acting the way a human being acts when they're jealous. That's what Hashem is doing. Hashem, when He punishes a person for worshiping another god, what He is doing is He is punishing the person as if he were jealous, kibiyachol, so to speak, of the other god, which doesn't exist anyway. And the Torah is telling us, you should know, Hashem behaves like a jealous God. Don't worship other things, because Hashem doesn't tolerate that. Just as a person, when they are jealous, they can't tolerate the affection that they want going someplace else, Hashem acts the same way. Avodah Zarah is the worst of all Averos, and that's the one that Hashem will not tolerate. And it brings the wrath of Hashem down, kibiyachol, so to speak. So that word, kana, is the same word as zealot. It's the exact same word. It's not a different word. It's not a synonym. It's the same word, same root, same everything. It's just that when you use it in the context of Pinchas, it's translated in English as zealot. But in Hebrew, it's really the same word. So how is it the same word? Because we Jews were worshiping other gods. Hashem is, as we said, a jealous God. He is a kana. The word jealous is not really an accurate translation, because as we said, Hashem isn't really jealous. But He behaves the way a jealous person behaves. So Hashem is a God who is kana. So when we worshipped other gods, Hashem was prepared to lash out, so to speak, at us. Pinchas, he acted on behalf of Hashem. He did the kina of Hashem. He said, Hashem is a jealous God. I am going to stand up and act on behalf of Him. In other words, I will experience that jealousy on behalf of Hashem. That Hashem should, kibiyachol, so to speak, feel slighted, that the affection is going elsewhere. I'm going to put myself, so to speak, in Hashem's shoes, feel that being slighted, and I will lash out on behalf of Hashem. Bekanoes kinasi. Really, if we're going to translate it, he jealoused my jealousy. We translate that as being a zealot. Because the truth is, that is what that's what zealotness is. Zealotry, I guess. I don't know what the word is. That is what being a zealot is. Being a zealot is taking up the cause of God. That's what he does. But he's jealousing, as a verb, the jealousy of Hashem. That's what Pinchas is doing. And that is acting as a kanoi, as a zealot. In order for a person to really be a kanoi, whether he's doing it properly or improperly, but in order to really be a kanoi, to be one who is jealousing the jealousy of Hashem, the person has to be authentically 100% acting on behalf of Hashem. Meaning, a person has to feel that indignation on behalf of Hashem. There are many people in this world who claim to be zealots, and they're indignant on behalf of Hashem, on behalf of another person, on behalf of the country, on behalf, whatever it is, on behalf of the flag. A person is a zealot. But if you would really break it down, most of the time, there's many other ulterior motives, there's many other motivations going on besides acting on behalf of whatever it is they're being zealous for. That I can claim that I'm upset because how dare you insult the flag, and I'm a patriot, and how dare you do that? But the truth is, I also don't like you so much. So it's a convenient reason to lash out at you. That's a very common, it's a very common thing. And most of the time, a zealot, someone who's acting with zealousness, is really, is not a true zealot. He's championing, he's carrying the flag of being a zealot, but he's not really. In order to truly be a kanai, one has to be acting 100% on behalf of Hashem, of the other entity. And that's what Pinchas does over here. And that's why Hashem here is going to give him all kinds of brachos, that he was bekanoes kinasi. He jealoused my jealousy. He acted on my behalf. Pinchas did not act out of any personal anger, any personal distaste or annoyance with Zimri. Pinchas had no reason to dislike Zimri. Pinchas had no personal gain over here. It was totally and completely for Hashem. How do we know that? Because of Hashem's reaction. That's how we know it. And Hashem says, I would have lashed out at the Jewish people because I am a jealous God. That's what would have happened. But Pinchas stepped in. He did it for me and ended, took away my anger. My anger is gone. And it's because of Pinchas. Because he did it for me. Because he picked up the banner of Hashem. That is a true kanoi, a true zealot. Now, even a true kanoi has its limitations. This is not something that should be done on a regular basis. We learned that from other examples in Tanakh, that even though being a kanoi has its place, even when it's done with perfect motivation, it still is not necessarily the correct way to behave on a regular basis. Let me give A very common example, which is more common with men than with women, but I think women can relate to it as well, and that is the person who is at davening, who is a serious davener, who is a person who always takes davening seriously, davens well, etc., and becomes upset, annoyed, angry over the talker, the one who stands there talking during davening, disrupting talking during davening. And a person gets very upset and goes over and shh, or, you know, says something, whatever, you know, like that, right? So the problem with that, and I can't say that I am innocent in this area, the problem with that is that when people do that, they are almost never acting out of complete zealousness. There's almost always a personal motive as well. And as long as there's anything personal there, then it is not true kanos. How can you determine in yourself whether it is true kanos or not? Well, take the person who is the talker, who's being disruptive, and substitute that person for a really good friend of yours. And then decide whether you would have the same reaction, or would you go over and calmly, maybe, you know, smile at the person, take the person out, I don't know, whatever it is, or would you just ignore it? Right? If it's someone who you really like, then your whole demeanor changes. Well, then that's not kanos. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. If you're championing the banner of Hashem, you're carrying the flag of Hashem, doesn't matter who's on the receiving end. So if by substituting the person who I'm about to yell at for someone who I really like, and I wouldn't yell, well, then my yelling is not really totally because of Hashem. That's a very good litmus test. But even when a person is completely and totally acting on behalf of Hashem, it's true zealousness, even so, it doesn't mean that it should be done every single time. Because kanos is really a last resort, even when doing it right. So what I'm pointing out is that there's two problems with kanos. The basic problem with kanos is it's almost never done right. That's the first problem. In which case, it's flawed at its inception. But even when it is done right, it's meant to be a last resort. It is not meant to be something that is the weapon of choice, which is the reaction of choice. It's meant to be something that is done, like here in Parshas, at the end of Parshas Balak, when there was a plague and people were dying and it had to be stopped, that was the way it was stopped. But if it's not that bad, then there are other ways to stop bad behavior. Pinchas, though, did the right thing. So, continuing on page 876, what does Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu on Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12? Lachein emor, therefore say, Hinenino Saint Lois Brisi Shalom. I am giving to him my covenant of peace. So Hashem says, I'm giving to him my covenant of peace, that now he will have, well, what does it mean, my covenant of peace? Now I'll have my covenant of, what is my covenant of peace? Rashi tells us this means that, like a person who feels indebted to someone else. So Hashem says, I am now feel, kivyachol, so to speak, indebted to Pinchas, because he fought on my behalf. I owe him, says Hashem. That's brisi shalom, my covenant of peace. V'hai salo ulizaro acharav, it will be for him and for his children after him, bris kehunas olam. It will find expression in him and his children after him as a covenant for kehuna forever. He will now be a Kohen. We mentioned last time that Pinchas, although he is the grandson of Aaron, he was not yet a Kohen. Why is that? Because when the Kohanim first became Kohanim, Only Aaron and his sons became Kohanim, and anyone born after that event, after they became Kohanim. So any of Aaron's grandsons born after Aaron and his sons became Kohanim were Kohanim. And as you know, from here on in, anybody who's born from a Kohen is a Kohen. But Pinchas was born before his father Elazar became a Kohen. Therefore, Pinchas was excluded from this special status of Kohuna, even though he was the son of Elazar, the grandson of Aaron. But with this act of Kanos, he now becomes a Kohen as well. And he and his children after him. Which is a very important point to remember and very special. Every single Kohen in the world is not a Kohen because they made themselves into a Kohen. No one who is a Kohen can claim that they earned it. They didn't earn it. They were born into it. They didn't earn being a Kohen. They were born into the family of Kohuna. They owe their Kohuna to their great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Aaron. Except for Pinchas. Pinchas earned his Kohuna on his own. His children owe their Kohuna to their great-great-great-great-grandfather, Pinchas. Even though they also come from Aaron. But they owe their Kohuna to Pinchas. Because Pinchas earned it. Now, if it wouldn't have been Pinchas who did this, let's say it would have been someone from the tribe of Yisachar, would that person have become a Kohen? I don't know. I suspect not. I suspect that it's only because Pinchas did this and he's also a descendant of Aaron. The two things together are what enabled him to become a Kohen. That's what I suspect. However, the fact of the matter is, Pinchas, if not completely on his own, but certainly partially earned the right to be a Kohen, which no other Kohen other than Aaron did. All of the Kohanim didn't earn the right to be a Kohen. They got it because they're from Aaron. So he gets a bris kuhunas olam. He gets a bris of kuhuna forever. Tachas asher kinei lelokav, that is in place of or because of the fact that he was jealous or zealous on behalf of his God, by Yechaper al Bnei Yisrael, and he atoned for the Jewish people. It is, perhaps you'd say it's ironic, that what is the bris of Kohuna, this covenant of Kohuna? It is a bris of Shalom. We know Aaron HaKohen stands for Shalom. Aaron is an Ohev Shalom. He loves peace. The Rodev Shalom. He chases after peace. We know that's a hallmark of Aaron. The Kohanim stand for peace. How did Pinchas earn the right to be a Kohen, this covenant of peace? He earned it through an act of violence. Not through an act of what we would have called an act of Shalom. Hashem says his act was an act of Shalom. It was not an act of violence. Now, of course, physically there was violence. But in the grand scheme of things, looking at it from a divine perspective, it was an act of Shalom. Why was it an act of Shalom? Because it brought peace between Hashem and his children, between Hashem and the Jewish people. Hashem would have punished and Pinchas atoned for the Jewish people. He brought Shalom to the Jewish people. The act of what we would call violence actually was an act of Shalom. You see why this entire discussion is a dangerous discussion. There are many people out there who claim to be acting with violence in order to bring about peace. That's their purpose. And really, no, it's violence, pure and simple. And it's very easy for a person to claim the banner of kanos, of zealousness. So that's why we have to keep in mind the preamble that Pinchas was acting 100% on behalf of Hashem, and that this was a last resort. But in that situation, even though it is a violent act, it is an act of shalom, because it brings peace. Which is an important point also for us to keep in mind, which is very difficult for us. We are so entrenched in the culture that we live in, it's a very, very, very difficult thing for us to accept that the definition of a positive act versus a negative act, a good act versus an evil act, is not how good we feel about it. And sometimes there are cases where it's usually when you have a choice of having machlokes, having a fight, versus having shalom, having peace, almost always shalom is the way to go. Shalom is the preferred way to go that we have in many places throughout Tanakh and throughout Chazal, that nothing is greater than shalom. That's the most important thing. And that's for sure true. But there are times where shalom is brought about through what appears to be an act that is the opposite of shalom. Let me give you an example that, again, in our culture, we have a very hard time relating to it. You have two people who are happily married to each other, a loving, beautiful relationship, but the Torah forbids their marriage. If the Torah forbids their marriage, it is a mitzvah that they break up. A mitzvah. But you'll say, but that's not a good thing. It is a good thing. It's not a good thing that they're there to begin with. But it is a good thing that they break up. You'll say, but whoa, we don't want to bring, wait, shalom. But sometimes what looks like shalom is not. And what looks like it isn't shalom is. So every case, of course, needs to be examined individually. And this is not a blanket pronouncement, but there are cases where what seems to feel right is really wrong. And what seems to feel wrong is really right. And here you have an example of an act of violence, which Hashem characterizes as shalom. The Pinchas, after he did this act, was accused of really being himself a bad person, because Pinchas is born from Elazar and Elazar's wife. Who's Elazar's wife? So the Torah tells us that Elazar married Mibenos Putiel, from the daughters of Putiel. That's who Elazar married. I show you that in the pasuk itself. That's who Elazar married. Yeah, back on page 322. On page 322, the Torah is going through the lineage of Moshe and Aaron. This is before they come to speak to Paro. And in Pasuk Chaf Hei, verse 25, on page 322, it says, Ve'elazar ben Aaron lokach lo mibenos Putiel lo li'isha. He took from the daughters of Putiel for himself as a wife, Vatela lo es Pinchas, and she gave birth for him to Pinchas. From the daughters of Putiel. So who is Putiel? Sounds like it's his father-in-law. He took one of the daughters of Putiel as a wife, and from that wife came Pinchas. So who is Putiel? So Chazal tell us Putiel is actually a reference to two different people. It's a reference to Yosef HaTzadik, to Yosef that we had in last week's parasha, that he resisted the wife of Potiphar. And the way Chazal say it is he was pitpate b'yitzro. Pitpate is the terminology used in Chazal. It's the verb used, which seems to mean he denigrated his Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara came after him, and he was like, ah! Get away. He was mefat peit b'yitzro, pit peit b'yitzro. That's Putiel. And the other person this refers to is Yisro. Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law Yisro, who was mefatim agolos lavodazara. He fattened calves to worship idolatry. Because as you know, Yisro, before coming to Torah and to Hashem, was an idolater. So Putiel comes from pit peit, which means to like denigrate his Yetzer Hara for Yosef, but also lifatim, to fatten a calf for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry. So Elazar's wife, Pinchas's mother, was a descendant of Yosef and a descendant of Yisro, meaning her father and mother, one of them came from the line of Yisro, and one of them came from the line of Yosef. The Gemara is unsure which one came from the line of Yosef, which one came from the line of Yisro. Meaning, Elazar's father-in-law and mother-in-law, one of them came from Yisro, one of them came from Yosef.
Isn't he probably like the oldest of seven sisters?
Yes.
Something?
Yeah.
Well,
that it depends how many generations later we are. It could be one of their sons. Right? So it's unclear which one was from Yisro, which one was from Yosef, but Elazar's wife, Pinchas' mother, comes from both lines. So the Gemara tells us that here in Parshas Pinchas, after he killed Zimri, many people were saying, Ra'isa ben Puti Zeh, did you see what this Ben Puti did? This son of Puti did? Shepitem avi imo agolos la'avodah zarah? That his great-grandfather, that he used to fatten calves for idolatry? Who does he think he is? That he steps in here and he kills such a prominent person like Zimri. That's what they were saying. Many people were saying that. So that is why Hashem has to step in over here, and he has to make clear that no, Pinchas did the right thing. So the pasuk continues on page 876. Pasuk Yudalid, once we have established who the hero was in the story, now we will establish who the villains were. V'shem ish Yisrael hamukeh, and the name of the Jewish man who was struck down, asher huka es hamidyanis, he was struck down along with the Midian woman. That is emphasized because, of course, that's why he was struck down, because he was with the Midian woman. Zimri ben Salu, his name was Zimri ben Salu. Nesives av Lashimoni, he was one of the leaders of the house of Shimon. One of the families of Shimon, he was one of the leaders of the families of the house of Shimon. V'shem ha'isha hamuka hamidyanis, and the name of the woman, the Midyani woman who was struck down, what was her name? Kozbi vas Tzur, her name was Kozbi, the daughter of Tzur. Rosh umos beis av b'midyan hu, he was the head of the leaders of Midyan. He was the head of the leaders of Midyan. Midyan had five families, five lines that made up the country, the people of Midyan. You know, of course, that Midyan, like all the ancient countries, they started with one person. Just like Bnei Yisrael, Yisrael is a person. Yaakov's name is Yisrael. We are all the children of Yaakov, of Yisrael. Mitzrayim was a person. Plishtim was a person. They all started with a person. Well, same thing with Midyan. Midyan was a person. And Midyan had five children from whom the country Midyan came to be. If you hold the place here on 876 and turn back to the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah, we will see the antecedents of Midian. Page 120. Page 120, in the beginning of Perikov, hey, chapter 25, it says, Vayosef Avraham Vayikath Isha Ushma Ketura. Avraham continued after the death of Sarah, and he married a woman whose name was Ketura. Vatelad Lo, she bore to him Es Zimran, Ves Yakshan, Ves Midan, Ves Midyan. Midyan is the fourth son of Ketura. If you skip ahead to Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Uvenei Midyan, and the sons of Midyan, let's count them, Epha, Va'efer, Va'chanoch, Va'avida, Ve'elda'ah. Midyan has five sons, all of whom become the lines of the country Midyan. There are five. Now, let's go back. And now we're going to skip ahead. I'm going to show you the leaders of these five families. Let's hold the place in 876 and turn ahead on page 904. The Jews will eventually fight a war against Midian to punish them for what happened with the Jews at the end of Parshas Balak. And on page 904, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Bes Malchei Midyan Hargu Al Chalaleihem, and the kings of Midyan they killed on their corpses. Who are the kings of Midyan? There are going to be five. Es Evi, Ves Rekem, Ves Sur, Ves Chur, Ves Reva. That's five. Chameshes Malchei Midyan, the five kings of Midyan. Each one came from one of these five families that made up the line of Midyan. The third one mentioned here on page 904 in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, is Tzur. Evi, Rekem, Tzur. That's the third one, is Tzur. Now turn back to 876, and now we know, when we say that Kuzbi's name, Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15, V'shem ha'isha ha'mukah ha'midyanis, the name of the woman who was struck, the Midian woman, was Kuzbi Vas Tzur. Kuzbi, the daughter of Tzur. Tzur is the third of the five kings mentioned. Rosh Umos Beis of Midian, who he was actually the head of the five families of Midian. Rashi explains that he was demoted after what happened to his daughter, and that's why on page 904 he's listed third. Really, he was first of the five, but he was demoted because of what happened with Kuzbi here in this incident with Zimri and with Pinchas. So they are listed, both Zimri and Kuzbi are listed, that we should know who were the evil people in the previous story. We have Pinchas, we've developed Pinchas a little bit, so now we develop Zimri and Kuzbi. We also are doing this besides the fact that once we show who the tzaddik was, we want to show who the rishaim were. This is also done in order to emphasize the heroism of Pinchas, that he was not afraid to start up with and fight with a leader of the Jewish people and a daughter of the leader of Midian. That this did not deter him. He was fighting on behalf of Hashem, and because of this, he was willing to get involved, even though they were prominent people. One last point is, there is a discussion of who was Zimri. Who was this person, Zimri? This person from Shimon. Zimri's not mentioned before in the Chumash. There is a discussion about it. And there are various suggestions made in Chazal. We could really go back to Shimon's children and show, go through who he was. But because there's various opinions, we could do it. I just find it to be a little bit, it just be showing you various opinions. I don't have a very, you know,
table.
I don't have a definitive, statement to make. This is who it was. But remember that, all the tribes had many children, had several children, and there is a suggestion that Zimri is from one of them. Either way, whoever he was a prominent member of Shimon. Just as we just showed it with Midian, that there were many families, five families making up the lines of Midian, the tribes also had prominent families that made up their lines. Reuben had several lines, Shimon had several lines, Levi had several lines, so Zimri was the head of one of those lines of Shimon. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Any questions before we break? Okay, so we'll stop here. And
thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.